It's coming home. Doesn't it sound good? Welcome along to the Racing Post Euro 2020 final special podcast. I'm Bruce Millington and I'm joined by my euphoric colleagues, Dan Childs, Mark Langdon and Aidan Perkins. Over the next half hour or so, we will be going through the best bets for the biggest football match in well over half a century. England versus Italy at Wembley on Sunday. It's going to be extraordinary. The betting activity is going to be great. So we'll try and point you towards a couple of decent value bets. We'll have a haphazard go at trying to do a bet builder as well. Hopefully we can agree on a few things. And I've twisted the lads' arms and asked them to come up with an anti-post bet for the new season, which is probably only about 4 weeks away. So tons to be getting through. But first of all, lads, I was lucky enough to be at Wembley last night. It was exhausting. It was draining. It was uplifting. It was just absolutely magical. I got home and I was exhausted. You were in town as well, Mark, weren't you? Was that you I saw dancing around on the top of that number 12 bus?
I made my excuses and left by that point. But yeah, I was in London's Leicester Square. I was actually heading home when just waves and waves of people obviously were pouring out of pubs, you know, bars, restaurants, whatever, from nearby. It felt like everybody was heading to sort of the centre of town. There was a real sort of feel-good factor that can only come about from sort of the success of a national team. And I know that I think Jamie Carragher did a good piece this week, actually, about how likeable this national team was and how it's for kind of everywhere, because not all parts of the country, I think, have sort of been in sort of had England fever previously. And there's been a lot of club v sort of country battles and players have been booed, haven't they, from certain clubs. But it feels like everybody's together, and that can only be a good thing.
A likeable team, but and a very much likeable manager. Aidan, where did you watch the game?
Yeah, unfortunately, just at home, Bruce. I mean, you know, I did want to. I sort of thought about getting around to my brothers, who had a few people around and stuff. But with the twins and everything, I thought I'd rather sit down and concentrate and watch it on my own. You see, so you know, you sometimes when you're watching it on your own, you're able to get into it a bit more, aren't you? And I mean, I agree with Mark that the team is together, isn't it? And I think it all comes from the manager, doesn't it? You know, Southgate has been outstanding. He's, you know, maybe not everyone's cup of tea in the way that he approaches all the games. You know, sometimes he is a bit conservative and maybe more of a defensive sort of a mindset. But, you know, he's got all the big decisions right so far. His selections have paid off. And there is a real good feel factor, you know, around the country. And as much as England...
Whereabouts in the country are you, Aidan?
Yeah, I'm in the Midlands. So just sort of just south of Birmingham, just Solihull Way.
Oh, lovely. And were they dancing on the streets of Solihull?
Yeah, we heard a few, trying to get the kids to sleep, and we heard a few car horns going up and down and a few people there, you know, out sort of on the streets singing a little bit as well, which is quite surprising for Andy because it's quite a nice area. So, But, yeah, I think everyone's into it, aren't they? And, you know, looking forward to Sunday night.
And what about on the streets of Watford, Dan? How was it?
Yeah, it was great. I was watching it with my 9-year-old boy, Joseph.
He's nine now. And no child ever grows up more slowly than you think. But I can't believe Joseph's nine.
But he's still young enough not to be sort of scarred by the past experiences. So he's quite sort of confident and, you know, during the game and excited getting into it that way. And I'm just still convinced that it's all going to go wrong, you know, due to the previous scars and that. So it's just... You know, you wait so long in your lifetime to get to a final. It's just a fantastic moment.
You're absolutely right. Okay, well, that's the euphoria done with. Now let's dive into the analytical side of it. Because, I mean, the one thing we should say, if you are viewing this solely as a punter, is it's one of the closest games I've ever seen. I mean, I looked at one film. I think it's 15-8 each or two and 2-1 the draw. So it really, really is a difficult betting event. I think, you know, it's hard for anyone to say, I really fancy them, or, you know, I think they'll win that 3 or 4-0. But we'll try and unpick it. We'll get the lads' view first, just on straight how they think the final will pan out, and then we'll delve into stuff like first scorers. Aidan, what's your overriding feeling as you assess England versus Italy with no emotion and just two football teams?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I like the draw. I think it's going to be a really tight one. Draw at 90 minutes would obviously have paid off in you know both of the the semis, which went to extra time. So, you know, I've seen that at about 19 to 10. So that would be the way I'd be looking at it. I mean, it is a real difficult one to try and separate the emotion out. And we always say don't bet when you feel sort of emotional about the teams and that. You know, I often don't bet on my own team because of that reason. So, you know, I'm looking at it from a analytical point of view and thinking it will be a really tight game. Both teams as well, I think, will obviously approach it maybe with a fear of not wanting to lose rather than going to win. And we've seen that from both teams in the tournament, maybe more so England. You know, Italy have attacked it a bit more, but, you know, we saw them sort of sit in and be defensive at times as well. So that would be what I'd be looking at. Draw at 90 minutes.
Draw for Aidan. What about for Dan?
I fancy England just to get the job done in some shape or form. I agree the draw's a big runner. So, you know, maybe you won't want to go for England in the 90 minutes, but I do feel that, you know, England are the likely winners. I break down the teams and you look at, I think Italy have probably got the better goalkeeper, Donnarumma, I really rate. I think they've probably got the better centre-backs as well. And I think Italy have probably got the better midfield as well. But having said that, I just think in some key areas, I think England have got, you know, a bit more about them up front with Sterling and Kane. I think the full-backs, with Spinazzola being injured, is a big blow for Italy. And Shaw is such a weapon for England as well. And I think the bench as well for England, which is why I'm sort of going towards to lift the trophy rather than 90 minutes. I think England's bench is so strong. You saw the effect that substitutes, you know, made when they finally came on, you know, against Denmark, like Sir Grealish, Foden, Henderson.
He left it late, didn't he, Dan?
Gets a lot of credit, but I thought he left it, you know, later than was necessary, and it could have backfired. But I thought after he got those three eventually on, the 10 minutes after they came on at the start of it, of the first period of extra time, I thought for those 10 minutes was the best I've seen England play in a tournament. They just, on the ball, dominated the ball. Denmark never had a sniff. They looked creative and composed and just had a lot of good footballers on the pitch. And the goal, though the penalty was soft, was coming at the time.
It definitely was. It was. I must admit, Dan, I thought he might have taken Kane off towards the end and stuck Rashford on, because I thought Kane was out on his feet. But I also wasn't a massive fan of going to the back five there, because I just thought he's inviting pressure.
Sure,
he had them by the throat. I didn't think he needed to do that.
They were gone, Denmark. They were, yeah, you know, they also, don't forget, they had a player golf injury, so they were actually down to 10 men. So the only way to, you know, to invite pressure and have some balls come into your box, which never happened in the first period of extra time, was to sit off like we did. Yeah. So there are risks attached to being overly cautious as well, which I don't think often get mentioned.
Absolutely. Now, Mark, in terms of formation, would you expect Southgate to revert to a back five, or would he stick with the 4-3-3, do you think?
I think he'll stick with the four at the back, because, you know, the time he changed sort of, you know, for a whole game was when he just matched up against Germany. Italy play a variation of 4-3-3 themselves, and so I expect him to just match up there. There's probably only what I mean, you know, people will be calling for Foden or Grealish, but the chance of them starting is pretty low. You know, it looks to me to be, you know, Sancho or Saka for that one spot that he keeps rotating. I would imagine it would be Saka, just because of the defensive work he puts in, because Italy do that, you know, the lopsided thing where one of the fullbacks goes forward. Of course, it was Spinazzola right at the start of the tournament. Now it's Emerson. You know, Insigne comes inside. It's a pretty predictable way of playing. And I think that, you know, Southgate would have had long enough now to have come up with a plan to sort it out and to work out the best ways of sort of nullifying Italy and then hurting them where they're weaker. But I think the best way to beat Italy is to have the ball, because that's what Spain did. Italy really didn't like it when, you know, Spain had that much possession against them, because Italy are a possession-based team. My fear from an England sort of supporter point of view is that Southgate's team won't be able to dominate the ball like that. And I think if you give Italy the ball, you're asking for a bit of trouble, really, because that's where their quality is.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. I mean, I didn't think it really happened for Saka last night. And I know everyone likes to apply a narrative and people say it's a bit overwrought. I know he made the goal, but he didn't really do a lot else. So if he keeps his place in the team, then, you know, he's going to have to step up a little bit. But it's going to be absolutely fascinating. I mean, Mark, one thing I would ask you with this is, you know, is there a danger that Italy have kind of, they've obviously been on this phenomenal run since they failed to qualify for the last World Cup, but, you know, everyone goes on about 33 games or whatever, but a lot of those are either friendlies or easy qualification games. Are they that good? What's happened to their reputation since this started? Because I think it's kind of grown a little bit disproportionately. Is that unfair?
I think they've been the most fun team to watch consistently. So probably the praise is right enough. They've been involved in a couple of absolute classics, really, haven't they? With, you know, the Belgium game was brilliant, and so was the Spain game. Now, I know that the other team played, you know, big parts in that, but Italy were also there, and, you know, were part of, in terms of quality wise, maybe the two best games of the tournament. So I think it's fair. I mean, you could argue that you know, that they haven't, you know, that the group stage, you know, Turkey and Wales, you know, got absolutely hammered. You know, but Switzerland came out, and if you look at what Switzerland did, they knocked out France and only lost then to Spain on penalties. So
the Austria performance wasn't brilliant, was it?
It wasn't brilliant. But I mean, you could say the same about England. The Czech Republic performance wasn't brilliant.
No,
the Scotland one wasn't brilliant. I don't think the Germany one was particularly brilliant, despite the end outcome. So I mean, I agree that these are two really well matched teams. Once you put home advantage into it, if it was on neutral venue, I would fancy Italy. I think it is almost a 50-50 game, and the draw, it's best price 21-10. I mean, Kevin Pelling wrote a piece in the Racing Post earlier on in the tournament saying 40% of knockout matches at the Euros had gone to at least extra time, which, you know, already I think brings that sort of 21-10 into play. This tournament, it's a little bit higher than that, 7-14. So I think the draw is a huge runner here, because, you know, both teams, because you can use six subs, 120 minutes, I think, does become sort of something that the managers are looking at rather than just winning it in 90.
Yeah, and also, Mark, these substitutes are cutting the game down massively. How there was no injury time, or only 6 minutes injury time, is ridiculous. There were three massive injury stoppages. And at one point, Denmark made a triple substitution, and this ceremony of replacing players is just getting out of hand. You had to wait for each individual player to troop off. It's insane, and it's cutting down the game time. So I certainly agree with that. Right, before we have a quick break and come back with our best props, etc., I'm going to nail the lads down for a score prediction. We'll start with you, Aidan.
Yeah, I'll go for 0-0 at the end of normal time, which is not going to make for an exciting game, but I can just see it being really tight.
And then what?
And then at the end, I'll go England to edge it in extra time like they did last night.
Okay, Dan?
Look, on a bet, I would take the insurance, obviously, as I've said, of England on the outright. But if I was to go, you know, to nail down a 90 minutes correct score, I'll say 1-0 England.
1-0 England. And Mark?
1-1.
1-1. Excellent. Thank you, chaps. Right, loads more potential betting opportunities on the final, and we'll discuss those in just a jiffy.
Be sure to check out the Racing Post website throughout the Euros for daily tournament previews, news and expert tips.
Right then, welcome back to the Racing Post Euro 2020 final postcast with Bruce Millington, Mark Langdon, Aidan Perkins and Dan Shards. We've got the lads' outright thoughts. They think it's going to be tight. Where might there be some value, my friends, on all the various multiples and derivatives that are bound to be offered? There's going to be specials galore. Hopefully there'll be some special offers as well. Do keep a lookout for them, because they may well give you a little bit of an edge. We'll start with you, Dan Childs. What's caught your eye in your early investigation of the markets?
On the subject of the first score for England, I was just watching the Denmark game last night. The amount of times Harry Maguire was getting his head to balls, you know, from set pieces. And this is against a team with three big centre-backs, Denmark as well. So it's not easy to get your head on the ball. And he was making some good contact. Schmeichel, you know, made a good save from one of his efforts. And I just think that even though Italy are strong in that area with Bonucci and Chiellini, I think Chiellini's been outstanding in the tournament, England do look for Maguire all the time. And I think at 33-1, for me, he is overpriced to get the first goal.
If you, what's your least favourite of the four songs that England fans sing? It's got to be the Harry Maguire song, isn't it? My goodness, man. I got onto a tube train yesterday on the Bakerloo line on my way back, and all of a sudden I was just in this mad carriage full of England fans banging on the scene, and they're all singing that stupid Harry Maguire song. But anyway. Give me the Atomic Kitten version any day. Okay, so we've got Harry Maguire for Dan. Aidan, what have you taken a shine to?
Yeah, I mean, I know I've just said 0-0 at full time when you were pushing me on a score, but I like more goals in the second half than the first half. That's something that I think, you know, is maybe going to play out. Obviously, with the fact of what I've been saying before about it being a really tight game overall, so I can see more goals in the second half. That would have paid out actually in three of Italy's games so far, and also three of England's. And I do get the feeling, like I said before as well, that, you know, both managers might approach this with a fear of not wanting to lose rather than going to win. So, you know, it could set up to be a more open second half than the first half. I've seen that at about 11-10. I've also just seen on a special somewhere Harry Kane to score a header at 11-1. That sort of catches my eye a little bit, with Kane coming into the real form now, and obviously he's going to be looking at pushing for the golden boot as well. He's got four now, hasn't he? So I think just another goal takes him up level with Ronaldo and Schick. So if he's involved in goals, Kane obviously very good in the air, scored a header against Germany, so that's another one to look at as well. Obviously it's a bit more of a risk, but something that just caught my eye.
Okay, Mark, by the way, did we both go to the first game at the new Wembley in 2007? Do you remember that? I'm sure you came with me to that.
England under-21s against...
England under-23s against Italy, yeah. Under-23s. Do you remember?
Yeah, I was there,
made,
yeah.
A nice bit of corporate, yeah. Didn't we?
Yeah.
Who,
yeah,
played, yeah, in that, who will be playing on Sunday? Which one player?
Bonucci?
Nope.
Immobile?
There's a question.
Nope.
Can we get a clue, Bruce?
He plays for Italy. Cellini.
No? Oh, okay. Cellini. Oh, okay.
How about that?
Yeah.
He played in the first ever game at the new Wembley. Wow. Along with Lee Camp, Gary Cahill. Who else was in the England team? Ashley Young. I went through it the other day because I thought, I'm sure he was involved in that. Anyway, that's nothing to do with betting. Mark, what have you got for us outside of the basic win, draw, win?
In terms of the card market, I thought Jorginho about 4-1 might be somebody to get involved with. He's, you know, because now obviously the tournament, you can't get totted up, so you can't get suspended. So there might be a few more cynical fouls played out. And he's somebody that he gets involved a little bit in those moments. Like in the Champions League, he's booked against Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid. You know, he's somebody that's been, you know, considered Italy's most consistent player in this tournament. But you can, and I think it happens at Chelsea a little bit, you know, he can get dragged around the pitch a little bit. Spain managed to do that to him very successfully. And, you know, I suspect that England will try to play somebody, whether it's a Kane or whether Sterling comes inside, to just play, you know, in between the two centre-backs and Jorginho, because he doesn't like, you know, he's very good on the ball. He doesn't like the defending aspect of that role. So he was somebody I thought might just get involved in it. And he's absolutely Mancini's man. So while a lot of the Italian sort of front sort of five or six have been rotated in terms of substitutes, like Jorginho just seems to stay out there all the time. So he's somebody, and, you know, I feel like bookings might, as the game wears on, is when you might get sort of a few more. And an absolute,
we don't know who the ref is yet, Mark.
No,
by the way.
No, we don't know.
It could be Arbiter Brick, couldn't it? The one who looks like Dan Childs.
Well, I mean, it could be. I think they've all been really good so far. Yeah. Actually, I haven't got any.
Do you reckon Michael Oliver was sitting there going, oh, bollocks when
yeah, yeah, I mean, it's never great, is it? Yeah, I think Clattenburg has spoken about that before. And then in terms of the anytime goal scorer, and this is only, it was more because I nearly backed him on Tuesday and he hit the bar, and I was horrified that I hadn't sort of actually gone through with it. But Emerson, he's 40-1 to score anytime in
40?
The game. Yeah, and the way, of course, that Italy play, with that left back playing really high up the pitch. You know, Spinazzola didn't score in the tournament, but, you know, he could have had a couple. Let's face it, you know, he was in the right areas. And then Emerson, he nearly got through on a one-on-one that where I think Simon just come out and cleared it. And then he hit the bar. So he's somebody that if he starts, and I mean, there is a half a chance that he might play, he might move things around a little bit and put Di Lorenzo on the left-hand side if he wants to be a bit more defensive. But if Emerson starts, 40-1, he scores.
40's the first goal scorer, sure. He can't be 40s to score any time, can he?
He's 40s to score any time, Bruce. Got the market up. Got the market up. Now you get some.
Which bookmaker?
He's 40-1. Not with just one bookmaker. He's 40-1 with a few. It's obviously not supposed so. He's 40-1.
What's he to score first? Then he must be massive.
Sky Bet, Bet Victor are two that are 40. William Hill are 40s as well.
Good Lord.
So yeah, I mean, well, because the game's in for so few goals, isn't it? That, you know,
sure.
You know, if you think that like Harry Kane is 9-2 to score first, I mean, you know, that doesn't happen very often, does
it? Absolutely.
So, you know, Emerson's, he's 80, but there's a bit of 100 around him to score first. Look, I mean, you might as well have a go on both, mightn't you, at those kinds of prices.
Exactly.
But it was just from a tactical point of view, he plays pretty high. I mean, you know, he's 100-1 shot for a reason. But, I just thought it kind of didn't factor in to the way that Italy play. And, you know, you want to have, if you're going to be cheering on an Italy goal, you want it to be at a big price, don't you, really?
Of course you do. Absolutely. By the way, mate, we were obviously, you tipped Denmark. I followed you in a decent bet on them. How much was that on your mind? I had it as a nice little consolation prize throughout, but towards the end, I just didn't care about it.
I was probably a bit more pro Denmark than you. I just couldn't help it, to be honest. I didn't jump around when the free kick flew in, but I certainly didn't have my head in my hands at that moment. But
you took your Viking helmet off at one point. I'm not too proud.
I did feel that as the game sort of went on, that Denmark were just out on their feet after about 75 minutes. So it looked like England were going to win. And, you know, I'm happy enough that England are in the final, I think.
Me too. It's lovely. It's really, really nice. Dan, will you watch it on BBC or ITV?
Probably BBC, just for, you know, lack of adverts.
All right, fair enough. Well, have you got a strong view on that one, Aidan? It'll be, what will it be? Mowbray and Genus, the Matterface and Dixon, will it? Will they put McCoist in?
They'll go with what they did for the semis. I think I'd prefer the BBC personally. I think Sam Matterface did meet him a few years ago, and he's nice enough chap. But he seems to script his openings, doesn't he, and his endings. And he was all poetic, or tried to be all poetic at the start. And even last night, Lee Dixon kind of took him down. He said, "You've done the big build up, but you didn't need to. Just listen to the atmosphere or something." And he was sort of, I think, which is a bit of fun, like. But yeah, I'd prefer the BBC, even though Genas sometimes is a little bit annoying as well. But I'd go BBC.
I remember writing a column years ago and accusing Tildesley of scripting everything, and he wrote me this really nice email. It was sort of a bit, you know, he wanted to make his point, but he said, "Look, you can always come and welcome to sit behind me and watch me do it." He said, "It's all off the top of my head." So interesting stuff. Right then, let's get a bet builder together, lads, shall we? We need a bit of consensus. I think what I sense so far is that we all think it's going to be tight. So is everyone happy to make under 2.5 the first thing? Or should we gamble, Aidan, and go under 1.5 as our first leg?
I'd be tempted to go under 1.5. I'd see what the other lads would think on that. But obviously it's more of a gamble. Maybe play it safe and go under 2.5.
All right then, fair enough. How do I get a bit builder up? Right, okay, we'll do under 2.5 to start with. Right, I'll just get that up. Mark, what do you want to chuck into the mix?
Or, I mean, I'd probably go for the card one, I think, really. I mean, I think Jorginho is somebody that, you know, could get himself into a little bit of trouble in this game.
So should we put Jorginho card in there as well, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's have a look. Let's see, I'm trying to build this bet as we go. Jorginho, that's 4-1 here. And Dan, what's your leg going to be?
I would just go with England to win outright. If the other lads are happy with that.
England to win outright. Hang on a sec. To lift the trophy, England 4-5. Right. Okay. So that that multiplied. Oh, hang on a sec, I can't do. It's not letting me do that on the bet builder. I can do doubles, but not triples. But some should do. Okay. Do I add to that, or do I just leave it to you three wise guys? I think we'll do that. We'll go under 2.5. We'll go Giorgino to be booked and England to lift the trophy. There's your podcast, your postcast bet builder. One more question before I let you go, gentlemen. The new season starts, when is it, Martin? It's the 6th of August. It's less than a month, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think it's 4 weeks tomorrow.
We'll need a holiday, surely.
Yes, I know. But I'm sure that being the professionals you are and the voracious hunters of value that you are, you've had a little look at next season already. So I want a little anti-post steer from each of you, and we'll start with Aidan Perkins.
Yeah, Leicester in the Premier League to finish in the top six again. They've done that last two seasons. I mean, they should have finished in the top four the last couple of seasons, but ended up tailing off badly and finishing fifth the last two. They're on the up under Brendan Rodgers, won the FA Cup. I think they'll make some decent signings. Already made a couple of signings, haven't they, at least? And I've seen 11 to 10 on Leicester finishing in the top six in the Premier
League.
That's
a mad price. When you said it, Aidan, I was like, well, yeah. Christ, that's not very adventurous. That's odds against.
Yeah,
goodness
11 to
gracious.
10 with 365, that is. So. I mean, that may well change, mightn't it, in the build-up to the season if they make some more signings or whatever. But I think that just looks really good value for Leicester to finish top six.
And they won't have, I mean, Tillman's apart. They haven't had too many players who'll be knackered, have they? Whereas a lot of the other clubs, they, you know, their players, their Eurostars are going to have to go back a bit late. That does seem a big price. Aidan, I just thought with Leicester, I was talking about this with a few fellow Palace fans the other day, and that if Wilf goes, the club that should be absolutely shifting heaven and earth to buy him is Leicester. It'd be fantastic for them. He'd be just because they've been using like Perez or Albrighton a lot this, you know, last season. And
yeah.
I just think Wilf in there would be fantastic for them. So, yeah. Okay, 11 to 10 Leicester. That's a really interesting one. Dan, what have you got for us, my friend?
I'm going for Port Vale at 20 to 1 in League 2.
Oh, you've nicked mine.
I thought I might have done, Bruce. No, I mean, League 2 is such a tight league. I mean, there was only 9 points between the top seven last season. I think it'll be tight again. Salford, a lot of the big spenders every year. They're taking up a lot of the market. But they often disappoint Salford. Last two seasons, they've been 11th and 9th. And I just think, you know, if a team's going to beat them, could be Port Vale. 8 wins in their last 11 games at the end of last season. Improved massively after Darrell Clark went in there in February. And he's not resting on his laurels. Got a load of business done early. And I think they're going to go close.
Brilliant. That's jolted me out of my Euro bubble. I talk about Port Vale, that's for sure. 20 to 1, I can see about Port Vale. Thank you, Dan. And Mark?
Just to say, Bruce, I built that bet with one bookmaker. It's a 25 to 1. So there's your guide
is it
price.
Really?
For,
oh, that's yeah, decent, isn't it?
England to lift the trophy, Jorginho to be booked. And then,
under 2.5 in 90 minutes.
Apologies. I thought it was under. We're going under 1.5. So that was 25.
Well, give us 1.5 and 2.5. So 25s, and then the play safe option is
14 to 1.
That's still decent, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, it feels like a run, doesn't it?
Does, mate. Yeah, that's good. Okay, what have you got for next season, Mark?
It might just be a copy and paste job, this one, but Burnley to be relegated. The reason that people think Burnley won't be relegated is just because they don't, and that Sean Dyche just gets it right. But I mean, I was looking at, I think that the three that have come up are good. You know, Watford, will feel gutted that they went down when they did, played some good football once they sorted out the manager, and you expect them to go again. They have done before. They've got good players. They'll probably bring in more. Norwich, Billy Gilmore, I think is an interesting signing for them already. I would be a little bit worried about them, but I still think they'll be very competitive. And then Brentford, I think if you have a look at sort of the prices that they've been going off in their matches, in the Championship, I mean, a lot of the odds makers have had them down as a Premier League team in waiting for a while. Now, whether they can play that same football, if they maybe lose 5 or 6 on the trot and confidence goes, that would be a question mark. But I certainly think all three of them will be very competitive, which brings your boys into play.
God, does
Palace.
It ever.
But they're 2-1.
Is Vieira a good appointment or a bad one?
I don't know. He plays quite pragmatic football, which might actually be better suited than, you know, going down the Frank de Boer route previously and trying to change everything. I mean, while Zaha's still there, I'd be inclined to think that the Palace can do enough to stay up. I think it'll be pretty close, but Burnley are 11-4, and I look at their squad and it's really thin. And if the sort of Sean Dyche magic doesn't work at any stage, then I mean they've got the potential to just go, haven't they? Really, I mean, they never really seem to spend much money, and I just think that the teams that are coming up are quite good. So if they are to be if they are to prove to be good, it makes a few of those that, you know, just stay up pretty vulnerable. And so I'd be putting Palace, Burnley, Newcastle, them sort of teams all lumped together. Newcastle, there's still this talk of a takeover, which, I mean, I think if you want to back them to be relegated, just maybe wait a little while. I don't see their price collapsing. And then it was Burnley or Palace, and Burnley are the bigger price. But, you know, if you have a look, like Southampton, I don't see Southampton going down. I don't see Wolves going down. There's definitely potential, I think, for maybe a Palace or Burnley to go.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. Okay, chaps, excellent stuff. Before we go, I'm just going to get all romantic here. It's that there's 2 minutes of extra time to play. It's 0-0, and England go ahead and score the winner, and the whole country erupts. Which player do you want to score that winner, Aidan Perkins?
Sterling.
Yes, I love that. The Sterling backstory is just brilliant, isn't it? BBC did a bit from his primary school today, and you cannot believe how close it is to Wembley. The arch is just right there, so that's a great shout, Mark.
Bruce, sorry.
Oh, go on.
I was just going to say, I think he deserves it, Sterling, doesn't he? I mean, it's so much sort of doubt about him. People criticise him, you know, in the build-up to the tournament, not treated particularly well by maybe certain sections of the media. And Southgate stuck by him. And maybe, you know, people were right to question it at the start of the tournament that he was a definite starter, because he wasn't great for City towards the end of the season. But, I mean, he's lifted this England team. When Harry Kane wasn't playing well in them first two games, he was the main man. And, you know, even last night, you know, he gets the penalty and you know, almost scored the first goal as well. That was an own goal. So if anyone, I think he's a man who deserves it.
Well said, Aidan. Mark?
Well, I mean, as a Spurs fan, I mean, Harry Kane, and then hopefully he won't leave. Because he'll think, I've won my trophy with the national team, so I don't need to leave. But I just think in terms of a backstory, I mean, what about Luke Shaw? I think has been one of England's best players. I mean, Mourinho treated him absolutely horrendously, still has pops at him now in the media for some like bizarre reason.
Well, it's not a bizarre reason, it's an obvious one, because he's a bloody child, Mourinho.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't really make much sense. I mean, like, Shaw is, I mean, he comes across as just a really sort of quiet, nice guy, really. I mean, Pochettino used to stay behind at Southampton and I think play like badminton with him and stuff like that. And like, it was really like, you know, it was almost sort of bullying in the workplace what was going on when the two were together at Manchester United. And you know, he's been one of United's best players this season. I think he's done really well at this Euros, and he's somebody that I'd quite like to see be the sort of hero if there is to be one.
I agree with that. And Dan?
I'm going to go with Jack Grealish coming off the bench, maybe, and getting the winner.
Like,
I mean,
the arch would fall down, wouldn't it? Oh,
I mean, you think about, you know, everyone sort of takes for granted now that, you know, the route that we've had through, but there's actually a real doubt, you know, 0-0 in the game against the Czechs, whether we were actually going to, you know, even win the group and then get that, you know, that nice draw that we ended up getting. He puts the goal on a plate there, doesn't he, for Sterling. In the Germany game, he comes off the bench in a tight game at 0-0. He's involved in both goals. And since then, he hasn't really been seen much, not really for his own fault, really. So for me, for him to come on and get the winner would be fantastic.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think there's any that you wouldn't want scoring it, would there?
I'm just going to say that there's probably Scots, Welshmen and Irish people shouting at the radio, Immobile or something
that. I would have thought to score that winner.
That'd be fun.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your input. A couple of dates for you to look at. Well, not a date so much, but the Racing Post, both Saturday and Sunday, will be absolutely crammed with fantastic Euro 2020 final coverage. And as we've already mentioned, the new season isn't that far away now. And on August the 3rd, the Mega Racing Post big kickoff will be out free in the Racing Post edition of that day. So look out for that. Thank you so much for listening.
The postcard. Bruce, it's the fourth.
Sorry. It's the fourth. Oh, blimey, yeah. Is it?
Okay. Wednesday, August the 4th.
Oh, we've gone back a day. Okay, fine. All right, Wednesday, August the 4th. Thank you very much indeed for that, Mark. In the meantime, we're having a little break from the podcast. We'll be back for the new season. I'd like to say thank you to all the guests, all the experts, but also all the fantastic production team, all the guys with all their hard work for the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast this season. We are back in August. In the meantime, enjoy the game, and let's hope we get the result we want.